I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. We are celebrating 20 years in business and just entering our seventh year of doing this particular program. We have a few new exciting changes. First, we have our new 2014 open line format that comes with the launching of our brand new website. You can also find an archive of past topics on the publication and event tab. Plus, our new book has been launched, Cracking the Business Code, is available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icons on our homepage. It's truly a global seller. Lighthouse has really been growing at a very rapid pace over the past 36 months, which you can read more about on our website. Our topic today is game-changing advisory boards. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style assessments to raise the hiring bar and to assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, executive onboarding for success, leadership training for the 21st century, exploring global options for expanding your business, sales and customer service training, and operational productivity improvement. Each of our programs helps to avoid getting stuck in shallow waters so our clients have smooth sailing. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations. If you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track open line series is in response to a number of calls we get from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various issues that most organizations are facing on a global basis and domestically today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we'll open up the line so you can talk directly with our guest. So you may want to write down two or three questions to either send in during our program or ask once we open up the line. You'll also want to have a paper and pen handy or your local iPad to take notes, since we'll be sharing many ideas that you'll want to consider and implement with your team and discuss with your trusted advisors. Our special guest with us today is Ken Udy. Ken is a longtime friend. He's a managing director of the board group. Before joining the board group, Ken served as president and CEO of six different private equity-backed companies in a variety of industries, from logistics to building materials to racing, which was a real fun one, Ken, women's cosmetics. What they had in common was the need to create stability in their organization, grow the top line, and improve inefficiencies to drive profitability. Ken earned an MBA and MPR from the University of Southern California, where we won't hold that against you, Ken, where he's also in the process of launching the USC Marshall Family Business Center. For those of you either across the United States or somewhere globally, because I know we have a number of people around the world attending our program today, the USC Marshall Family Business Center is available and will be growing nationally and is available for international companies too. And most important about Ken, one of his biggest accomplishments, he appeared on a Family Feud.
You're bad.
His entire family, and it was a phenomenal program. I feel privileged to have Ken with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program. The topic will be how to take your company's attitude to the next level. Ken, welcome to Open Line.
Thank you, sir. And I guess if you even brought up the Family Feud, I should say, good answer. Anyway, thank you for the opportunity to talk about advisory boards. And you kind of consider, why you need an advisory board. And it's really a group that can help you get from where you are to where you want to be. I think we all, if you had kids and the kids have been involved in sports, many times you go get coaches to help them, you know, navigate their hitting skills, their pitching, or whatever it might be. So that's kind of the role of an advisory board. So as we lay out our discussion outline here for the next 30 minutes or so, we'll talk a little bit about creating sustainable value, which is a goal we always have, the role of a professional advisory board. I think there are three legs to that stool. There's the role for the owner, the role for the CEO and the management team, and then, of course, the role for the board itself. And then we'll get into some tools that we use in the practice to help identify and create sustainable value. The work is all, really kind of crafted by Bill Hoffield and John Zeffel. They collaborated together with the board group, but then also wrote the book, Game Changing Advisory Boards. If you have not gotten a copy, it's a quick read, and it's full of very practical tools that you can use. Over the years, the board group, we've been involved in a couple hundred different advisory boards, and for those companies that we've been involved in that have had a liquidity event, we've created or been a part of creating about $2 billion worth of value. And we always talk about sustainable value. In the early days, we talked about transferable value, but that tended to scare people because a transfer suggested a liquidity event, and that's a little disruptive to companies from time to time. So we've honed in on the word sustainable value. And our goal when we get involved in a company is to help to double the value of that business in a long-term, meaningful, sustainable way within a three-year period. So that's what the work of the board is defined to do, and we'll go through here some of the different tools that we use in the process. The first little case study, we got two companies here on the screen. On the left, it's a food packaging company. On the right is a company involved in the aircraft industry, creating parts. Both of them have about $5 million in EBITDA. The financial structure is fairly balanced. Both are growing at a 15 to 20% clip, have long-term customer relationships, are family-owned, and in their second or in some cases their third generation. But when we had evaluations done, look at the difference. The one on the left had a third party come in and do evaluation, and they arrived at 5x multiple or $25 million. And the company on the right actually went through a sale process and achieved a $65 million result. Both have advisory boards, so you got to kind of ask, what's the big difference here? What do you see that would create a 13x multiple for the company on the right versus a 5x multiple on the company on the left?
Ken, let's throw that question out to everybody and put some thoughts down on the chat bar there, and send those in. We'll give you 10 seconds to get that. Ken, throw the question out again.
Yeah, when you look at just, and I know it's rough because it's top line and you don't know the companies, but if both are achieving a $5 million EBITDA, how come there's such a huge difference in the valuation between a 5x multiple on the left and a 13x multiple on the right?
Okay, actually we got a response already. You guys are fast out there. One listener said the gross margin on the plain parts company looks much higher.
Absolutely. Great point, because you look at the putting $5 million on the bottom line on a $25 million revenue base, is a lot higher gross margin. So that's a great point.
Another response. One was a third-party estimate, and the other the result of a bidding process.
Exactly, and we'll talk about that in a bit, but that's absolutely true. The one on the left, they just, for family purposes, went out and got a third party to give an estimate, and as we talk about it, the one on the right really, went through a very planned and deliberate sale process over a three-year period. And also some other characteristics of these businesses. Now, both of them had boards that the board group was involved in. The one on the left were two brothers. One sat on one end of the building and the other as far away as he possibly could. They never talked to each other except at the board meetings. So it was kind of, you mentioned Family Feud, Dana. It was a version of Family Feud. So when there was a board meeting, it was more of a marriage counseling session to, keep the waters calm rather than to help work proactively on the business. and the ownership of the plane parts company. It was second generation, a brother and a sister who were absolutely perfectly aligned in their thoughts and their goals. And they kind of realized that they had personal limitations and desires. And the limitations were they were fine at running a $25 million business, but did not have the personal skill sets to take it above that point. And with the board's help, they brought in a professional CEO that really fine-tuned that engine, and they started to target for a sale. So, you know, you think about it, if they had $5 million on the bottom line and you're bringing in a professional CEO, that's probably $500,000, you know, a year investment for a three-year period just to get this thing, you know, teed up and ready to go. But with the strength of the gross margin and the operating prowess of that CEO, they were able to really fine-tune the business and, you know, achieve that result of $65 million. So it worked pretty well. And there are a couple times throughout this discussion we'll, you know, say a mantra that I heard from an investment banker that's worth writing down, and that's, you know, you manage your company for the long run. You always make the best long-term decisions, but prepare to sell tomorrow just in case. And that's what this company on the right did. They made all the right long-term decisions, but then took advantage of a hot market.
That's great, Ken.
We also like – I'm sorry, Dana?
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
And we always like to, you know, look at the different stages of a company and in the process of creating value. You know, at the survival stage, you know, that's kind of the entrepreneurial stage where you have an idea and you got a few bucks in your pocket and you're kind of scraping, and every dollar that you earn, you plow it back into the business. And part of the underlying constructs here is to think about where an advisory board might be able to provide value in each of these different stages. The next pitfall is to avoid the founder's trap. And I just finished a book by Lee Hausner, who is you know, very renowned in coaching family businesses. And in her book, she quoted Brian's second law of business. And Brian's second law of business is, sooner or later, the ability of any business to succeed in spite of itself runs out. And that is kind of what the founder's trap is, and where a board can help you, you know, identify that trap and navigate around it so that you can continue to grow by making good decisions. And then, like we saw with the aircraft company, align the team and execute, and then develop a viable exit plan and strategy for either exiting the business or transition it to the next generation. So we look at
Go back to the other slide for a second. We got two
questions
that just came in. At what point in a company's growth does it make sense to form an advisory board, looking at how you laid it out here?
You know, I think it makes sense, you know, from day one. My daughter right now is I will say struggling, but, you know, personally thriving, but struggling with a startup. And we've got a pretty good group of people around her to help in those decisions in the early stages. You know, many times a founder will get blindsided when they, you know, reach their first founder's trap, which is, again, a place where, you know, a board can help provide some guidance through that. And then obviously as a company professionalizes, it, you know, the board takes on a different configuration, but it's, I think all the way along the line, it makes sense.
And is there another question came? Where is the greatest ROI in forming an advisory board?
I think it's to get through survival. But then, if you're thinking about an exit, I think, you know, a board and a good team around you can really maximize that. And that's what we'll talk about a little bit later in this discussion, which is a combination of increasing the bottom line, but also increasing the multiple.
Okay, great. By the way, we have quite a number of people. This is a hot topic. So keep throwing your questions in as we move along. We'll try to answer as many as we can.
All right, so top line, what's the role of an advisory board? Well, you know, first of all, you're trying to bring in some people that have, you know, been there, done that, that will politely challenge you and be a sounding board for, you know, the owner and for the management team, you know, and in a polite way hold people accountable to help drive the results that the owner wants. You know, we'll talk a lot about alignment, and a good board must be aligned with the goals of the ownership. They got to have the skill set to provide the value, and we'll talk about the composition of the board in a bit. And I think the ability to provide, you know, feedback in an appropriate and challenging way so that it is well received. It can't be a barking and pounding the shoe on the table type of an approach. And that's where, you know, the fit and the character of the board really comes into play. And I also think it's important to kind of say what a board is not. You know, a board is not a gathering of the country club cronies or the accountant that your family's used for the last 15 years. That's not what the board is. You need to find that outside experience for the people that have been there and done that to politely challenge you. Also realize with an advisory board, it is not a fiduciary board. If you don't like the work the advisory board is doing, you can fire them at any time, unlike a fiduciary board whose responsibility is to, you know, hire and fire the management team.
Ken, a couple more questions just came in.
Yeah.
How long does an advisory board typically serve?
Good question. It varies, but I think if you're going to embark on this journey, you should be thinking, you know, 3 to 5 years. You need to be thinking 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
But again, as an advisory board, if it's not working for you, you can change the configuration at any time.
And how about any ideas of changing board members out so people don't get their feelings hurt, obviously, but any thoughts on that for setting it up for rotation?
Most of the boards we've been involved in, you know, we don't rotate the members that often, you know, because it's a productive team working together. If a board member self-selects themselves out because they're not prepared, not fulfilling the role, then that gets to be easy to address. But if the board is functioning well and providing value, we normally keep that team intact.
Okay. And one more question on that last slide. What power does the advisory board have? Can they fire the CEO?
No, an advisory board is, you know, I don't want to use the word consultant, but they're, you know, they're there to coach and consult with the owner and the management team. It is purely an advisory capacity. They do not have, you know, the power or control over the management team.
Okay, thank you.
You know, what we normally do when we get involved in a company is we'll take a full day to do an assessment of the company, talk to the management team and the ownership, and, you know, look to see where they are in their journey and what issues they're facing to create, you know, the right criteria for selecting board members. We think it's normally 3 outside board members is a pretty good number, and depending on the situation, somebody with industry experience is usually advisable. And we'll use a scorecard such as the one you see on the screen now to see how important the industry experience is, the skill set of the individual, and then the fit and character to make sure it's a good cultural fit. Many times we'll work with Dana's group to do an assessment of the board members to make sure it is a good fit with the owner and the management team. You know, this is kind of back to the role of what a board is not and things to avoid. You know, you need to find members who are good listeners, people that can be thoughtful. They are strategic thinkers. They can politely hold management, you know, accountable for the results, and that are, you know, totally data driven and avoid the emotional things. Alignment with the owner is critical for a board to function well and to provide the value. And as we look at the roles of each of the 3 major components of the board, we have the owners, the CEO and management team, and then the outside board members.
Ken, just 1 second. Another question. You guys are great at throwing questions out today. This is great. How long does it normally take to create an advisory board?
A couple of months, 2 to 3 months. What we normally do, Dana, is we start with an assessment, and we'll be talking about business disciplines here in a minute. And if the company has a strategic plan and an operating plan in place, then that gets to be pretty quick in terms of the direction that the board formation needs to go. If they do not have those plans in place, we recommend that we get those done first. So that would tend to delay the process of forming a board by the time it takes to do the planning process. But I think a 2 to 3 months is a pretty good, time window for putting the board together.
So it takes, you got to have a map to do this. It's not just, hey, let's get together and figure it out. If you put it together correctly and have a roadmap to it with a goals and objectives, it can be very powerful.
Yep. Yep. There is a board charter. You know, what are the roles and responsibilities of the board? What does the owner want out of the board? And those need to be, you know, in concrete and in step before we go in the process to try to do the board selection process.
Another question just came in. Is it more advantageous to have a paid or voluntary advisory board?
I think paid. I mean, I think if you're going to get people to, you know, take it seriously and give the time, you know, there needs to be some remuneration involved. Now, it's not huge monies. We can talk about that in a bit. You know, the typical board fee, a board member would get somewhere between $2,500 and $5,000 per meeting, depending on their skill set that they bring to the party and the size of the company. But I think you find most of the board members participate, you know, on the board because they like to give back and they like to help people out and pay it forward. But in turn, to get, you know, some compensation for that is reasonable.
Okay. Oh, Ken, another interesting question just came in. Let's see if I can summarize this. They have known some boards where people, the board members will be assigned, let's say, to go on ride-alongs with the salespeople, not to tell them what to do, but to understand the process of the marketing process. Somebody might sit in accounting to understand that. Is that typical, or is it more hands-off and more here's a meeting, here's some topics?
I think it's typical. I think to be a valuable board member, you need to, you know, embrace the company and dive into it. So to get aware of what's going on and the critical functions of the company are important, to get networked into what industry trends are going on are important, or you don't have the input to provide the guidance that the owner typically would like.
Okay. Thank you.
And then that's part of the reason that, you know, when we start off on a, you know, an assignment to put together a board, we do that assessment so we can sit down with the management team and understand what's really going on in the business.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So the role of the owner, you know, set the goals, provide some clarity, be information driven, honor the process that we go through in the board meeting, and help us set the agenda. If somebody is not used to having a board meeting many times, it's advisable to have a non-executive chairman to chair the first few meetings so that the owner can be a participant in the board meeting and the board process rather than steering it and leading it, which is hard for some of the founders to do. But it's important to make sure everybody's opinions are heard and valued.
Ken, since most people that are forming the boards are entrepreneurs, the founders, they're used to being in charge. How does the board deal with that mentality, or is that a whole other discussion?
It needs to be addressed at the beginning when we're setting up the goals for the board. We clearly get into the role of the owner and the role of the board and the role of the management team to make sure there's clarity there, because you're right, there are some founders that are used to, especially in the earlier stages of the company, they're used to being the dictator, essentially, you know, and they need to honor the process to let the management team, you know, do their thing and the board to have its place to provide some insights.
And I guess if they can't, it's better to talk about it up front to not waste the time and money of everybody.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. You know, and when you're going through the company assessment, you're defining the board charter, it's pretty clear whether the founder is wired that way and is receptive, or if they're going to, you know, not be as receptive. And if we don't think it's going to be a win-win situation, we would just, decline the opportunity.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, obviously the management team needs to be prepared. They need to know what the strategic and the operating plans are and deliver on it, be data-driven with a dashboard of those key financial and operating metrics, and it's always surprising with some of the emerging companies that they don't have that good dashboard, but without it, it's hard to keep score. You need to be data-driven. And that then provides, you know, the board, you know, a lot of the input that it needs to hold the team accountable for the results, politely challenge, ask the tough questions, and provide some of that honest feedback and guidance. You know, we talked about some of the disciplines that, you know, we look for when we get involved with a company that, you know, provides the company with direction, but also the board. And here's a list of just some of them. You gotta be data driven with the plans in place. The compensation plan is critical to make sure that management is incented to achieve what the owner is after. The dashboard keeps score of that, and to have the, you know, the transparency and the ethics and the accountability, all that helps create a great culture. Some things to write down here, and this is out of chapter 6 in the book. Then, you know, the disciplines are all around planning, but it's important to really, you know, and you might want to write these down, is define success. What outcomes do you as an owner want? Build a game plan then to deliver it. Instill those financial and operating disciplines. Keep score based on the facts. You know, Coach K would love to keep score on these, right? Build that game-breaking organization and build that culture. It's just critical to have the culture. In the book, there's a quote that says, you know, culture will eat strategy's lunch every day. So if you don't have the right people in place, it's going to be hard to achieve your results. Hmm. Now, a lot of what we've been talking about so far is about the how, or the role of the board. And now we want to talk a little bit about the how. How do we, you know, focus an organization to achieve the results that the owner wants? And in Chapter 7 in the book, we talk about the sustainable value wheel, and it starts off with this basic four-quadrant model. You know, and look at it, too, what, north, south, east, west, or body, mind, spirit, emotion, earth, wind, fire, water, whatever. But it's these four basic components with, on the top, the disciplines is really how you think. It's the ideas. It's the disciplines of the business. On the east side is the attractive markets, and all of this is built around building sustainable value. We mentioned just a second ago in the south quadrant how important culture is. It's culture leads strategy for lunch every day. And then on the west side, the predictable revenue, it really comes from three things. You know, it comes from a great product line, a diverse customer base, and size. I mean, as you're building value in your company, when you get your EBITDA, you know, north of $5 million and north of $10 million, you will see your multiples increase. And all these four quadrants, you know, hover around the nucleus of financial strength, which is, you know, profitability, margin, and the balance sheet. And when you take this four-quadrant model from, you know, a 3,000-foot view, when we get involved with the companies, we bust it down into, you know, 15 identifiable segments that we'll look at here in just a second. And what we like to do with a company on these value wheel components is rate where you are today on a scale of 1 to 5. So let's just say culture. We've been talking about that. You want your culture to be a 5. And then we rate, where do you think you are today? So if you rate that to be a 3, you have a fairly big gap on a fairly important component. And then we evaluate those gaps and help the management team and the owner develop the plans to close those gaps. And here are the key factors that we rate from the CEO, management team, culture. Then we start to get into the business disciplines, the product line and the customer base, the attractiveness of the industry, and all of that then leads us to, you know, what we define as a, you know, a must-have company. And if you're considering, you know, a sale in the future, you know, all of these areas you got to have really locked down, because if you enter into a due diligence process, the goal of the buyer and his due diligence team is to attack your credibility. And if they can attack your credibility on any one of these key spokes, it's just kind of a chink in the armor, and it kind of spirals down from there. So you just need to make sure that your house is in order on all of these, and the value wheel is a way to provide some focus on that.
You know, it's interesting you brought that up, Ken. A client of ours is in the middle of a sale, and in preparation for it, they had an external company come through and do an audit. So when the final buyers were there doing the bidding, they already had all the data, which
yep.
actually
That's
gave
right.
them a higher value because it showed everybody that they have their act together. They've done their homework. They're thorough.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, that goes back to the comment we made earlier that, you know, run your business for the long term. You know, run it so that you're going to transition from generation to generation to generation, but be ready to sell it tomorrow. So make sure all those business disciplines are tight. I actually heard last week, Dana, there was one company that was about to go to sale, and they did not own their company name. You know, they didn't have their IP locked down.
So
stop the process. Go make sure everything's locked down and tight before you go down the path towards a liquidity event. And with a lot of these things, you know, everybody, an effective dashboard is huge. You know, identify what your KPIs are, and I firmly believe if you can measure it, it will get better. I encourage you all, you know, we talked about the value wheel. You know, go to the Board Group website. You'll see the value wheel icon. Go ahead and click on it and take a free assessment of it and just see what that tool is like. We have more and more clients now that are engaging their management team with the value wheel, and we're using it at every board meeting as a way to see if we are making progress, if we are able to turn some of the reds and the yellow quadrants into green. Here's one for you, Dana. You know, I mean, if this were a real value wheel assessment, you know, what's going on here? What would you do?
Perhaps a CEO 360.
Yeah. Or perhaps a cleaning of the house, you know, because you look at this one, if we have negative ratings on the CEO, the management team, and the culture, that is a train wreck just waiting to happen. You know, and if a board sees that, depending who some of the board members are, I think that's where, you know, the board comes and lives at that company and helps them through. It's either, yes, a CEO 360 to try to save him or stabilize that team, get the culture in place, get a new leader in the corner office, and then rebuild it. Now, fortunately, in this example, there is good gross margin and a good diverse customer base and product. So, you know, yes, it's a train wreck waiting to happen because of the management team, CEO, and culture, but it looks like some of the other fundamentals of the business are still in shape. You know, and here's another one. This one you can look at that the, you know, the culture and the management team is in shape, but it looks like, you know, the customer base and the product base is a little narrow. So where can a board help on this? Well, you know, maybe we get a board member that has, you know, product development or industry experience to try to help create a broader customer base and help create some new products that will be more in demand. So that's kind of the value of the value wheel. And, you know, go to the website and use it. And if you want to get into an in-depth assessment where we really start looking at the gaps, please let me know. We'll be glad to work on that.
You know, I'm thinking about, actually, Ken, one of our clients that you guys have worked with, they've had their board 3-4 years at this point, and they have gone from, let's say, a nice a mom and pop. It was bigger than that. But now they've grown to a substantial company where they're taking on national accounts, huge national accounts. And they would never have been able to do this before. But where the board has come in is helping with the roadmap of the kind of people they need to have along the way so then the CEO could do the planning and do the budgeting for it. And then they went after the market in a very gracious way, but they were prepared for when the accounts came in because they were targeting them.
Yep, exactly. It's part of the, you know, the strategic thinking that a board can help some of that outside, you know, wisdom, particularly if you get someone with industry experience on the board, it can really provide some of that value.
Matter of fact, on some of the key hires, they had board members do some interviewing along the way with some key questions that the board members probed into and uncovered things that actually made identified the person and made it a win-win scenario. If they had gone another route without asking those questions, it would have been the wrong move.
Yeah, yeah. This slide is kind of a setup for the next one. Everybody knows that most companies will sell on a multiple of cash flow, multiple of EBITDA, and you can see how over the years that has trended, you know, from a low in the 2008-2009 period of a 5 point up to, you know, a high in what, the 2005 of an 8.5. Now the game here that we're trying to achieve is we're trying to double the value of the company in 3 years. So that's a combination of two things. It's getting stronger EBITDA, but that's also increasing the multiple. So what, you know, the board can do when working with the company is identify what steps can be taken to increase the multiple. And in this example, you know, if the current base multiple is assumed to be a 5 times and we want to get it to 10 times, you know, or 12 times, we try to identify what do we need to do. Maybe in this example, you know, getting more diverse customers and products might be worth half of a turn. Getting the right management team in place, like that company, the aerospace company that we saw in the very first couple of slides, getting the right CEO and management team in place, the owners credit, you know, about 20 to 30% of the increase in having that team in place. Creating that must-have company. And, you know, we mentioned it before, but we didn't, you know, really talk about, you know, what a must-have company is. You know, and this is, an investment banker was pointing this one out to me the other day. He said that, you know, most buyers have a vision of where they are and where they want to go. But if there's a bump in the road, and if that bump is you, that's a must-have company. If it is more, cost them more time and more money to replicate you or beat you or defeat you in the marketplace than to just buy you outright, that is a must-have company. So, you know, a board can help you identify who the potential buyers might be, what their bump might be, and how to position your company to be the bump that they just have to get over. Business disciplines can be another. So these are just, you know, things to lay out that then the board and management team over the, you know, 3-year journey can try to work on to increase the multiple in addition to increasing the EBITDA. And then for those that, you know, if you are considering a liquidity event, you know, we encourage you to plan ahead. Plan at least 2 years ahead and get your team in place. Let the owner and the family, you know, decide the right timing. Again, we go back to that same thing we said, run your business for the long term, but be ready to sell tomorrow. Get an investment banker involved early so you can identify what those value escalator steps might be. Get your transaction attorney in place. Danny, you mentioned the self-due diligence process. Yep, between your transaction attorney and your tax attorney, that's a great exercise to go through. Make sure that the CEO and the management team are aligned with the owners. Of the half a dozen companies I've run as CEO that have gone through liquidity events, it gets really, really disruptive. So you got to make sure that the senior management team, the people that, you know, you want to, you know, keep the wheels on the bus, make sure that they're aligned with the owner. So if a liquidity event happens, it's a good day for them as well. With your wealth manager, get a realistic view of what the value of the company is with the investment banker. Then work with your wealth manager to make sure that's enough, that it's enough to sustain the lifestyle that you and your family want. And that group of people right there on the screen is, you know, who your value building team should be. And I should say that, you know, sometimes you see the investment banker on the board, but I look at all of these other spokes as, you know, service providers to the owner, and they don't need to necessarily be members of the board. But identify them, get them on board a couple years in advance so that they are totally aligned with your goals and desires. And then when we come to the kind of the concluding things, I hope, you know, you've taken some notes, and I'd encourage you over the next 10 days to get your pencil out here. And, you know, if you have an advisory board in place, do you have the right charter for them? What parts of your strategy do you think you might need to change? Do you have the right team in place? Do you have the right systems in place to achieve your goals? What can you do to enhance your personal performance? And consider all of those things, and, you know, try to do one thing this week in a step towards that direction of creating more sustainable value in your company. And again, I would encourage you to go to the Board Group website, click on the free self-assessment using the value wheel, and then make that tool something that you use with your management team on a monthly basis in your operating review meetings to help, you know, drive the culture for accountability and create sustainable value. So Dana, thank you very much for the opportunity to share with your guests.
This is what an amazing program, Ken. In just a couple minutes, we're going to conclude this program. I'm going to turn the recording feature off because we've been asked over the years to not record the Q&A portion of the discussion. So please hang on just for another minute or so, and we'll open up the line. You'll see in your screen an area to register for our upcoming December 5th open line program, which is entitled How to Take Your Company's Attitude to the Next Level. And you need great attitude in the company to take it through to the next level, which Ken was talking about.
Yep. Attitude is culture, and culture will eat strategies lunch every day.
Good point. So please sign up today. Reserve a space for yourself. Let us know if you'd like your staff or other colleagues to attend. In the next few days, you're going to receive a recording and PowerPoint for today's program. So please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Ken, I want to thank you for your time today. Ken's contact information is at the bottom of the screen. You can email Ken directly, give him a call, or go to theboardgroup.com on the website and use the wheel. It's a very, very powerful tool.
Dana, I need to correct the phone number on the bottom, if you don't mind.
Okay.
The phone number for anybody to give me a call is area code 323-365-3787.
Repeat that one more time.
That's 323-365-3787.
Okay.
But the email address is correct, so thank you.
Okay, perfect. Thank you again for attending today. Let me turn the recording feature off. We're going to open up the line. Hold the line for just one sec.